God relates to men by what we call the covenant. The covenant. And if you guys, let's say you spend your time in Scripture, you're really reading about the Old Testament, the New Testament, you're really reading about how God is dealing with His people all throughout history, you keep running across this word over and over again, covenant. And we saw it today in the Gospel reading from Luke, from the Canticle of Zechariah. It talked about how God is remembering His holy covenant. And you know, He's acting upon this covenant. And Jesus at the Last Supper says, He uses the word, you know, new covenant. He's talking about instituting a covenant. And a covenant, about the simplest definition, is that it's a family bond. It basically creates family. So when you enter into a covenant, you become family with people. And this is why, as Christians, we don't just call each other friends, but we call each other brothers and sisters. And why God isn't just our creator, but He becomes our father. And Mary isn't just, you know, the mother of Jesus, just, you know, some lady that we revere, but she becomes a mother figure to us. And we don't just call the church, you know, an institution or, you know, an organization, but it's principally a family. This is what it is. Okay, this is what the covenant does. And in each stage of salvation history, when I say salvation history, I mean from the moment our first parents, Adam and Eve, fell into sin, all the way until the second coming, the final coming of Jesus Christ. This is salvation. So we're right smack dab in the middle of salvation history right now. God is saving. Okay? And all throughout salvation history, in each stage, God has formed a covenant with the human family by means of a covenant mediator, somebody who is mediating the covenant, who acts kind of as a representative for humankind before God. And the principal mediators, covenant mediators, throughout salvation history are Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, David, and Jesus. I want you all to repeat those to me real quick. Just kidding. I'm just kidding with you guys. Now, I want for you to memorize this. No. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, so what happened principally is that with each of these people, they represented humanity before God as God entered into a covenant with humanity. And the first covenant was made with Adam, and the human family what constituted a marriage at that point in time. God's family was a marriage, a man and a woman, Adam and Eve, Adam and Eve. And then later on in salvation history, God makes a covenant with Noah, and Noah is a father in a household. He has three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and their wives. And so there are these eight people, and this is the family of God. Okay, God, in fact, recreates the human race through Noah. He kills off all the human race except for Noah, his three sons, and their wives. And so, and He says to Noah, just like He said to Adam, be fruitful and multiply. Be fruitful and multiply. So Noah is kind of like a new Adam in a certain sense. It's like we all descend from Noah just as much as we descend from Adam, if you take the biblical narrative seriously. And so throughout this history, God's family is growing in size. With Abraham, there's another covenant formed. And at this point in time, God's family grows from not just a marriage, but several marriages, four marriages, in fact, and it's a household. But under Abraham, lots of these households become a tribe, and Abraham's a chieftain over this tribe. And then God comes down again, and He makes another covenant with the human family through Moses. And so now, under Moses, God's family is not just one tribe under Abraham, but it's 12 tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel, and they're formed as a nation under Moses at Mount Sinai. Okay, so you don't just have one tribe, you have Levi, Benjamin, Naphtali, Manasseh, Ephraim, Gad, Asher, Judah, Benjamin. You have all these different, these 12 tribes. And then these 12 tribes eventually become a kingdom under David, and God forms another covenant through David and through his son Solomon. And He grows his family even larger into lots of nations, one nation ruling over other nations, where basically you have the nation of Israel, composed of 12 tribes, ruling over, principally through their king, David, and then his son Solomon, and his son Rehoboam, and the different sons, and God's family is a kingdom. And Jesus comes, in the fullness of time, Jesus Christ comes to form another covenant. But this time, it's not one nation ruling over other nations, it's an international kingdom where everybody's on the same level. Jew or Gentile, male or female, slave or free. Okay, we're all made one in Christ Jesus. And God's family grows even bigger to include all people of all nations, no matter what your ethnicity is, no matter what your intellectual capacity is. This is God's family. And God is doing it through covenants. This is how the Bible is structured when you read it from front to back. And what I'm going to do real quick before we get into sacraments, because this is what I'm doing, is I'm leading up to sacraments, is I like to look at the difference between a covenant and a contract. One time I was talking with a particular individual, and they were telling me that they were part of a homeowners association, and with other homeowners they entered into covenants with one another. And I sat there and I was thinking, no, those aren't covenants. Those are contracts. And there's a difference, and I'll tell you why. Because according to a biblical mind, according to an ancient Israelite, a covenant was much more serious and far-reaching than a contract. You enter into a covenant, like how do you, okay, I'm outside of a covenant, how do I get into this covenant family? And how do I join the family through this covenant? Well, I have to swear an oath. I have to swear an oath. And swearing an oath goes like this. I swear to God, or as God is my witness, or as, you know, as God is my help, or by I swear by heaven and earth. You know, basically you're swearing, you're invoking God's name, and by invoking God's name, you know, calling upon his name, you get into the covenant. A contract, on the other hand, there we go, an oath is entered into by calling upon God's name. A contract, on the other hand, is entered into by a promise. Whenever you guys go to Walmart and you're buying something and you whip out your MasterCard and you slide it through the reader, do you sign, as God is my witness, I will pay this? No. What do you sign? Your name. Your name. Okay? You are the guarantor of the contract, not God. God is not the guarantor. You're the guarantor. And it's man's name that we're calling upon that is the guarantor of the contract. Covenants are indissoluble. Okay, so when God forms a covenant with somebody, that covenant is not undone. It continues in time. Okay? It continues in time. And if I break the covenant, if I say, you know what, I just want to stop keeping this covenant, it isn't as if the covenant stops existing. No, the covenant continues. The covenant continues. It's indissoluble. And contracts are temporary. Let's say that I tell my credit card, you know, I sign this receipt, you know, at Walmart, and I buy a new, let's say, a vacuum cleaner. And I sign for it, and then I'm signing, I will pay this. Well, I pay MasterCard, you know, my $150 for the vacuum cleaner. I have no more relationship with Walmart or with MasterCard. You know, if I don't buy anything else or sign any other contracts, my contractual relationship is over with. It's ended. It's temporary, right? We can go our own separate ways. Covenants involve an exchange of persons. So in a covenant, you don't say, you know, here's $150, give me a vacuum, and you exchange goods. But rather you say, you know what, I want to give myself to you. And then you say, I want to give myself to you. And it's an exchange of persons. So in the old covenant, in the Old Testament, okay, by the way, the Latin word for covenant is testamentum. And this is where we get New Testament and Old Testament from, New Covenant, Old Covenant. When we say testament, we're saying covenant. It's the same thing, same word, okay? In the Old Covenant, in the Old Testament, God, when he entered into a covenant with his people, he would say, I will be your God, and you will be my people. Okay? It was this exchange of persons. And also, who was it? Was it who was it that said was it Ruth who became a Israelite, and she said, you know, I will go wherever you go.
Your
I will
God will be my God.
Say it again.
Your God will be my
Your God will be my God. Was that Ruth?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And so Ruth said, you know, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to give you myself. And that's what's happening. It's exchange of persons. Whereas in contracts, we have an exchange of goods, of things. And in a covenant, marriage is a great example of a covenant. In a marriage, it's not like I just say, okay, you know, I'm going to give you, you know, I'm going to give you my house, give you my dog, my car, but me, no, I'll reserve me. No, rather, marriage is an exchange of persons, wholly and entirely. Nothing is excluded. Okay, and this is what constitutes a spousal relationship between wife and husband. And it's far-reaching. It reaches everywhere. It's not like I say, honey, I give you all of me, but what I do at 9 o'clock on Fridays is none of your business. No, everything is given. It's all-encompassing within your life. So a covenant is not just, you know, you just give a little bit. Rather, it's all-inclusive. And the difference between a covenant and a contract is the difference between a wife and a prostitute. What does a prostitute say? I give you a good. I don't give you myself. I give you a good. And it's temporary. And I promise I'll do it if you promise me the money. And what happens the next day? There's no more relationship. This is the difference between a covenant and a contract. So I want for you guys to get to think, when you think of covenants, you know, think much more serious. Okay, to enter into a covenant, you have to swear an oath. In the same way that to enter into a contract, you have to what? Sign your name, which means to make a
promise.
Okay. So in the covenant, one must swear an oath. And here's a picture of a guy swearing an oath. You know, he has his right hand up. So no oath, no entry into the covenant. And this is what we would, if we want to use Latin again, it's the oath is the sine qua non. That without which there is not. Without an oath, there's no covenant. It's absolutely necessary. Okay? And so in Jesus, Jesus is a covenant mediator. He's the final covenant mediator. And in him, God has established the new covenant with mankind. And so to enter into the new covenant, we must swear an oath, which is just as serious as what Father Alberto just said. It's not just back then it was serious. It's just as serious today in the new covenant.
Heavens or God, and a promise like, and a vow. Mm-hmm. I vow to do this.
A vow is a promise to God.
Oh, okay.
A vow is a promise, but it's a promise to God, but you don't invoke God's name as guarantor of that vow.
Oh, and then a promise okay. is just, I promise to Walmart. A vow is a promise to God, and an oath is swearing.
Right. A vow is like between a covenant, I mean between an oath and a promise. It's kind of halfway there. Okay? And so we have to swear an oath. Well, guess what the Latin word for oath is? The Latin word for covenant is what? Testamentum. What's the Latin word for covenant? The Latin word for covenant? Testamentum. The Latin word for oath?
Sacramentum.
The Latin word for covenant?
Testament.
The Latin word for oath?
Sacrament.
Okay, good. I'm glad that we've got that clear. Is an oath the same thing as a covenant? No. No. An oath is but the means by which you enter a covenant. An oath is like the doorway. The covenant is like the house. Okay, the doorway, or let's say a doorway kind of separated from the house. Okay, so it's not the same thing. And so this is where we get the word sacrament from. A sacrament is a sacramentum. Just add a U-M and you're speaking Latin and you're saying oath. In Latin, okay? And so sacraments are the means by which we enter into the new covenant. So I have a question for you guys. If there were covenants in the Old Testament, were there sacraments in the Old Testament?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, there were sacraments. Because every time that the biblical authors said oath in the Old Testament, if you spoke Latin, you'd say sacrament. It's just that in the New Covenant, we have seven sacraments that are more powerful than the Old Covenant sacraments. They're less numerous. They're easier to keep. They're far more powerful. So not only are covenants entered into by oaths, they're renewed by oaths. Once you're in a covenant, you say, you know what, I want to renew this covenant. You know, I want to renew it. So what do? You swear another oath. Okay? And so likewise, you could say not only are covenants entered into by sacraments, they're renewed by sacraments. So I want to compare the new covenant and marriage. The new covenant is entered into by what? What sacrament causes you to enter into the new covenant like a doorway? God bless you. Does anybody have any guesses? Yeah, baptism. And how is marriage entered into? The wedding vows. The promises to God that have the church and God as a witness. You know, promises to God that have God as a witness, so it's a vow and an oath at the same time. This is why the you have to have, you know, witnessing is part of the form of the vow. It's also before God. How is the new covenant renewed? We're in the new covenant. We're Christians now. How do we renew this covenant? The Eucharist. Every time we receive the Eucharist, we're renewing that covenant. And marriage is renewed by the marital act. And what is the marital act? You're doing what you said at the altar. You said at the altar, I completely give myself to you. I don't hold back my faithfulness. I'm going to be completely faithful to you. I'm going to be faithful until death. This is going to be, you know, for the rest of our lives together. And it's going to be fruitful. I'm not going to hold back my fruitfulness. I'm not going to take contraception. I'm not going to use the condom. Okay? I am going to completely give myself to you, everything, body, and I'm not going to keep my finances from you. I'm not going to keep my car from you. I'm not going to keep my time. Everything is yours. And the other spouse says the same thing. And so then in the conjugal act, what do? You do that. You enact it out. And so in baptism, what do we say to God? Do we say, God, you can have part of my life, but you can have my Sundays, but you can't have Monday through Saturday? No. You say, you can have all of my life, but you can't have my sexuality. No, we give God everything. And what does God do? He gives us everything. What do we get in baptism? Baptismal gifts? Presents? Maybe. Forgiveness of sins, but much more than forgiveness of sins. You get God Himself. The divine life enters your soul. Do you believe that? You won't see it. You won't feel it. You won't touch it. You won't smell it. It's not, grace is above our five senses. It escapes our experience. But it's real. And we know this by faith. Sometimes God does manifest Himself, you know, to spur on our belief. So how do we renew this? God, we enter into it by baptism. What happens in the Eucharist? Do we just symbolize this communion with God? Because, you know, Holy Communion is just a symbol? No. Jesus Christ gives Himself to us, holding nothing back, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the most holy Eucharist. O sacrament of humility, as St. Francis called the Eucharist. God humbles Himself under the form of bread, under the appearances of wine, and gives Himself to us. To where we receive Jesus Christ, not just into our heart, but on our tongues, and down our throats, and into our tummies. And so what does that mean, what we do when we go up and receive Holy Communion? Does God just do His part and, you know, we can just do whatever we want? No. What are we doing at the Eucharist? We are saying just what we said at our baptism. I give you everything, Lord. And if you're not prepared to give God everything, you shouldn't receive the Eucharist. Because that's how profound and real Holy Communion is. We're not playing around. And it's incredible when you receive with that intention. God will give you graces beyond anything you've ever had before, because you are receiving God himself. On a lighter note, who swears oaths in our society?
Witnesses.
Military.
People in the military. Presidents.
Police officers.
Okay, so we have these judges, senators, representatives. Why do we have these people swear oaths? Why do we have them get up and put their right hand up and put their left hand on a Bible and invoke the name of God? Why do we do this? This is weird, guys, and we still do it every day in this nation. Why?
Because
hopefully we trust them.
To be held accountable.
We can't trust them. That's why. We can't trust them, but we have to. And we have them swear to honesty, to faithfulness, to impartiality, with God as their judge. And if they are dishonest, unfaithful, unfair, guess what'll happen? Will the state punish them? Not if they're not found, not if they escape. But who will administer justice in the end? Who's the guarantor? God. That's right. Hold on just one second. But by swearing an oath and invoking the holy name of God, by calling upon God, they receive God's own divine blessing and assistance to help them be faithful to what they have just sworn. We can't trust them, so we put them under a curse, basically. And at the same time, it's not just all bad, it's also good. They get divine blessing to do what they need to do. So they get extra help. So by swearing an oath, you get divine blessing. And in the new covenant, we have a name for this. What is God's divine blessing, his help, that we get in the new covenant?
Grace.
Yes. Principally sanctifying grace. God himself, his own holy life, and actual grace. And actual grace. And so oaths invoke God's name to get his divine assistance, his grace. The seven oaths of the new covenant give us God's grace. The seven oaths of the new covenant give us God's grace. And guess what they also do? They hold us accountable. And so being a Christian and taking the sacraments isn't just all, you know, well, if I'm faithful, then I get grace, you know, and it's wonderful. But if I'm not faithful, oh, well, you know. No. We also place ourselves under covenant curses and under judgment. But God is always merciful and he always has sacraments to forgive us. So it's a win-win situation if we want to be faithful. And the seven sacraments of the new covenant are, okay, you guys have to memorize this. We won't let you become Catholic if you don't. No, I'm just kidding. But you should know these seven sacraments. They are baptism, Eucharist, which is also known, when you receive the Eucharist, we call it Holy Communion because you're communing with God. Confirmation, reconciliation, which is also known as penance and confession. Anointing of the sick, holy orders. This is why I said we'll be talking about Father Alberto, because that's holy orders, makes deacons, priests, and bishops, and holy matrimony. Holy matrimony. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break so you guys can refresh yourselves and do some jumping jacks. And there's tons of food back there. And we're going to come back and we're going to continue our study of the seven sacraments. So it's going to get exciting. So get excited. You get to listen to me more.